The guys in my Ian Shear know that we've been doing the Takana Yusho Ben Gamla, but I bracketed all the agadic parts of that that sugya, so I want to deal with them now because they're great. I will say that for now, I do want to dedicate this year in memory of Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin, who passed away this morning or last night, or I found out about it this morning. If I hadn't been dealing with, you know, bidud stuff and you know, taking Aaron for a corona test so that we can shorten this quarantine, I might have tried to find something in his writings to speak about, but presumably later. I'm, you know, more familiar with his, you know, I'm very familiar with his halachic writings and some of his agadic stuff, but I didn't look if he has something on Sota or Baba Basra. But we'll have to bracket that. Also, at some point, I want to get around to doing a shir from Rudal Yudov Schwartz. This year has been a really bad year. Like, all the modern Orthodox Gedolim passed away, like, one after the other. It's really been bad. Okay. So the Gemara tells us, and this is a little bit of review for Yaakov, but basically the public communal institution, public education, communal education in the Jewish community, according to the Gemara, is instituted by a person named Yehoshua ben Gamla. So the Gemara on the top of Chaf Aleph in Baba Basra says that Yehoshua mitakana Yehoshua ben Gamla ve'ilach from the time of Yehoshua ben Gamla and on, so you couldn't stop people from setting up public, you know, basically communal schools in your courtyard, because the Gemara quotes from Yehuda Marav, Beram Zachur Oto Ha'ish Litov. Let us remember that man, Yehoshua ben Gamla, for good. She'il Malei Hu Nishtakach Torah Israel. If it weren't for him, the Torah would have been forgotten from the Jewish people. Shebitchila, originally, Mishesh lo av milamdo Torah. Originally, whoever had a father, his father would teach him Torah. Mishein lo av loya lame Torah. Someone who didn't have a father wouldn't learn Torah. Why? My drosh, ulamatem otam, ulamatem atem. You learn, so then teach them and you shall learn. Hitkinu shimoshim lamdo yushalayim. So then they had schools in Yerushalayim, even for people whose fathers couldn't teach them. Why? My drosh kemitzian teitzei Torah, because from Yerushalayim, Torah should come great. V'adayin mishesh lo av haya malei malamdo, but still, someone had a father, even if he didn't know how to teach him, he would take him to Yerushalayim. But mishesh lo av, but an orphan, lo haya olev v'lamed, he couldn't learn. So it's kinu shu moshivin machol pelech upelech. So they would set up in every region a school. Machniz no to kevin tedzayin kevin yudzayin. And they would have people learn starting in 1617. Umishia rabo kawes alav umayavit bo v'yatsa. And if his Rebbe got angry, he would kick him out. Ad sheba yishu ben gamla v'tikein shu moshivin melamde tinoko b'chol medina u'medina v'chol ir v'ir. Until the Takana of Yishuv Ben Gamla, who said that from now on, every community has to have a school, whenever there's 25 people, and the halachic parameters I dealt with in Shir, I'm not going to get back to, whether 25 is the absolute minimum that the community can be required to support, or 25 is the maximum class size, whatever it is. But this public education in the Jewish community for Torah was set up by this person named Yehoshua ben Gamla. And this creates a really big problem in the Mefarshim. Because who is this person, Yehoshua ben Gamla? So we hear about him elsewhere. And the problem is that the picture that we get of him elsewhere, in one place indicates that he's a really good person, just like it does here. And in other places, it indicates that he's not a very good person, which makes this whole thing very confusing. Who is this person, Yehoshua ben Gamla, who set up the public school system, and what exactly is, what's his story? So we look at Tosfot and Chaf Aleph. Tosva tells you, who oto ish? The Omar of Yosef, Tarkavta de Dinore, Aili le Marta bad Baitus, Lianai, Ada Okim, Le Yeshua ben Gamla, Bechahane, Ravrve. So Tosva already tells you the problem. He says, we know one other thing about Yeshua ben Gamla, and that is that he was the Kohen Gadol. And why was he the Kohen Gadol? So the Gemara in Yevamot Samach Aleph tells us, let's see if you can parse this, right? What does he say? What's Tarkavta de Dinare? His wife paid a lot of money. His wife paid a lot of money to the king, to Yanai, to bribe him to appoint Yeshua ben Gamla as the Kohen Gadol. That's what we know about him, right? That he was married to this very wealthy woman, Marta bat Baitus, and she paid off the king to make him the Kohen Gadol. Now this creates a bit of a problem. Right? Because, you know, if he's such a good person, how is it that the person that we know as having instituted the you know, basically Jewish education as we know it, or whatever, the beginnings of the Jewish education as we know it, how is it that what we know about him is that he was basically, right, corrupt? You know, his wife, you know, paid off the king to make him Kohen Gadol, which, you know, I assume you understand that's not how things are supposed to work, right? That's not a good situation. We hear about him in one more place, and that's the Mishnah in Yoma, Gimel Tet, where we find out that the lots of the Kohen Gadol on when he would draw lots for the what's it called? For the Sayer LaShem and the Sayer LaZazel, so Yeshua ben Gamla made them out of gold, and the Mishnah there also says Hayumaskirin Oto L'Shvach, they would remember him, they would mention his name for praise. So we have this you know enigma here where we have three data points total about this person Yeshua ben Gamla, right? In two of them, it either says, Zachor Oto Ish L'Tov, in our Gemara, remember him for good because he set up Jewish education, or in Yoma, he's praised for having made the loss for the Kohen Gadol, for the Beit HaMikdash, out of gold. And the third fact that we know about him is that his wife bribed the corrupt King Yanai to make him the Kohen Gadol, right? So that leaves us with quite the puzzle, which is, what are we supposed to think about this person, Yeshua ben Gamla? And what does that tell us about this story? Why is he, of all people, the person who sets up Jewish education? And, you know, it's not just that his wife happened to, to pay off the king to make him Kohen Gadol. The Gemara in Yoma actually brings him as the example of the fact that during Bayit Sheni, the proper standards for the Kohen Gadol were basically dropped. And we do know, right, Ben Gamla is also mentioned in Josephus, where Josephus writes that this person, Ben Gamla, was a Kohen Gadol in the last 5 or 6 years of the Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, and he ended up getting killed in a bloody battle over control of the Kohuna Gadola, right? And there was a fight over the Kohuna Gadola, and he gets killed in one of these, attempted coups or something like that. Right, so he's a very strange character. So what do you think, right? With those facts in front of us. What is the Gemara trying to tell us? Or what can we learn about this guy, Yehoshua ben Gamla? What do we do with just these facts on the table, right? It's weird, right? Again, we have fact one, we remember him for good because he set up Jewish schools. He's the first one to really set up Jewish schools. Fact two, we remember him for good because he gave honor to the Beit HaMikdash and made the lots on Yom Kippur out of gold. Those are good. Fact three, his wife bribed his way into the Kuna Gedola, and he's the paradigm of the non-Ra'ui Kohanim Gedolim. And he dies in a battle over this, you know, these fights over who should be Kohen Gadol. So what do you do, right? How do you deal with this? What, right? How do you make sense of the personality? Rami. Okay, I'll push you a little bit on this, right? I mean, so Rami says, look, maybe he started out good, and then he slowly got corrupted. It's possible. You know, that just depends on when he did what in his career, right? You know, he started the Jewish education system and then, you know, became a big shot and then wanted power. It's possible, right? It's possible that that's the case. But you have to know chronologically that follows his life. Yeah, Yosef. Good, right? You could go the other extreme and say, look, maybe he didn't start out great. His wife did bribe him into the Kuna Gedola. But you know what? Enough years being Kohen Gadol, and eventually, you know, you start to come around. Right? Or maybe, you know, his wife bribed him in, but he wasn't such a bad guy. Or maybe he shouldn't have been Kohen Gadol, but he was a good person. Right? Or some version of that. Good. Yotam. Yeah. Very good. And the third possibility that Yotam says is, why are you trying to square the, right? Why are you trying to say that these are contradictory? Maybe that's exactly what Chazal want to teach you, is that life is complicated. You can have people who are, in fact, good in certain ways, very good in certain ways, and not so good in other ways, and that's not a contradiction. You don't have to look for for this. So let's look at what the Rishonim do. So the Ritva has a very simple solution. The Ritva is a purist. The Ritva believes that if someone is good, he's good, right? It can't be that someone who is so good and improves the Beit HaMikdash and sets up Jewish education is also someone who becomes Kohen Gadol because his wealthy wife bribes the corrupt king. So the Ritva, his first answer is, okay, but it's a good counter. But first, let's get the range. The Ritva is a purist, so what's his first answer? Efshar delav hainu Yeshua ben Gamla mitzeched yoma. It's not the same guy. Okay, there were two guys named Yeshua ben Gamla. One good, one bad. Deal with it, right? One lived in Bayit Rishon, one lived in Bayit Sheni. They lived 150 years apart. One was good, one was bad. That's all easy, very, very easy. And he says, the one in Yoma, you know, that's bad one. Lo yadam kasher. That's answer one. One second, Sean. That's answer one. Answer two is Yosef. Right? Answer two is Yosef. He says, possibility two, Inami. Yesh lomar, dehuhu. No, it is the same person. Ubatar deshimesh bekuna gidola. You're right. He started off corrupt. But enough years as being Kohen Gadol, hichshir masa vayachazid. He became a good person. You're right. He started off corrupt. He started off paying his way into the Kohen Gadol. But guess what? After a while, he started to realize there are more important things in life. And therefore, he became a better person. And when he became a better person, he started to, well, create Jewish education. You know, he became a really good person. Right? So answer one, the Ritva, you need to be a purist. If one is good and one is bad, they're different people. Answer two, Mapidom. He started off corrupt. He became good. Yes, Sean.
I don't see why he necessarily needs to say that he starts off bad and he either escaped him being the same person without saying that he starts off good, right? Couldn't you just say that it's corrupt time, right? The way in which things worked in the corrupt time was that in order to get power, you needed money, right? So you have this simultaneous fact that he got in through potentially improper means, but that was the means that you got in.
But then why would you need a
carry down? Okay, good. So Sean, so who says 90% of what you say? Toastvot says, Mapitam doesn't say Tzadik Gomoraya. Yeah, he's a perfect tzaddik. What do you want from my life? He's a perfect tzaddik. Look, he set up Jewish education. What do you want from him? The Gemara says he bribed his way into Kohen Gadol. He did. You know. So there were people, he says, said, you know what? There might have been people who were more worthy of the position. Like, he was a big tzaddik, but maybe there were people who were bigger tzaddikim. Right? So he bribed his way in. That was maybe not great. And maybe he wasn't the number one on the list. But he was pretty good. Right? Like, he was a good person. Or, you know, Sean's putting a little twist on it, which is, no. He was really a good person. It's just that it wasn't enough to be a good person. You had to be a good person with, a bit of a political whatever, right? You know? You needed to be, you couldn't be too good, right? You have to be good, but, you have to be realistic. Sometimes bribes are the way that things happen, which is not ideal, but it's a reality. So what do we have? So we have the Ritva, who answer one says these are two different people who live 150 years apart. Which is weird, because, Dikduke Sofrim notes that not all of the times did the Gemara say that it was Alexander Yanai who sold the priesthood, which would not make it be the right time period. Tosfot, as we said, says he wasn't a bad guy. There were just more qualified people. Or the Ritva says that, he started out unqualified and he became qualified. But Rabbi Tzvi Sinensky, in a nice article he wrote in the VBM, notes that, Yotam's more complicated possibility is really quite reasonable in the Sogya. And he writes as follows. Right? He says, we might suggest a third possibility. Despite having occupied the role of Kohen Gadol, Yeshua ben Gamla, note that he never receives the appellation rabbi in the Gemara, was an unlikely candidate to be recalled positively. In many respects, his corrupt appointment exemplified the degradation of the high priesthood and the sacrificial service towards the end of the Second Temple period. Yet the Gemara goes out of its way to suggest that he was nonetheless remembered for good. Refusing to bow to the pressures of the age, he chose to enhance the boxes used for the Yom Kippur service. And instead of sitting by idly watching the Roman carnage, Ben Gamla developed a sprawling educational network, enabling the Jewish people to survive the traumatic period that was sure to follow. We can now understand the significance of Yerusha, right? So he says, right, it's it's right, it is indeed possible, right, that he's a complicated person. So yeah, in terms of going gadol, the system was corrupt. Synergy is something, it's similar to what Yotam is saying in a certain sense, what Sean is saying in another sense, that, look, he's part of a corrupt system, right? The way Sean's putting it is, look, he's part of a corrupt system, but he's a good person, right? Okay, you know, he's part of a corrupt system, certain things you have to do, but he's fundamentally good. You know, you could put it a little bit more, you know, a little bit less pure positive in the way Yotam did it, which is that he's complicated, right? Yeah, he wasn't perfect in the sense that he, you know, bribed his way or let his wife bribe his way into the system, but he had really good qualities. But then Reisinensky adds an interesting point, which is it could be that what drove part of what Yeshua ben Gamla is the complexity that he's watching. Right, the fact that he's living in a world where the Kahuna Gedola, whether you like it or not, has been corrupted and has been degraded to something which is bought and sold by bribes to the king, that is already indicative of the fact that the period of the Beit HaMikdash is coming to a close, right? The golden age of the Jews is closing. And Reisinensky argues that maybe that's actually what drives Yeshua ben Gamla, which is this person who is either himself complicated and not perfect, or at least is a good person, or is a good person but lives in a complicated system, sees that. Remember, the previous line in the Gemara was that originally all schools were in Yerushalayim. Well, what is that supposed to tell us? So what Reisinensky says is, look, before this, all schools were in Yerushalayim because Yerushalayim was perfect. Yerushalayim was the place of the Mikdash. Yerushalayim was pristine spirituality. But once Yerushalayim is not that way, and Yeshua ben Gamla knows this and lives this because he's a Kohen Gadol who gets into his role through bribery. Right? And again, does that mean he's not perfect? Does that mean he's just part of a corrupt system? The point is that the goodness in him looks around and says, we can't just depend on Yerushalayim to be the only place where people can get spiritual education and inspiration, because Yerushalayim is falling apart ethically and religiously. Right, like he's evidence of that, right? Whoever he is, the fact is he got into his role through bribery, which means that the system is not exactly perfect. If that's the case, it makes sense that the response to that type of corrupted reality is to provide schools in every place for every person, right? Meaning once you can't rely on there being this pure, perfect hub in Yerushalayim, so your only hope is to make sure that people can learn Torah and be inspired by the Word of God wherever they happen to be. So that's the first half of this Agadah. So again, to review, right, the problem here is that on the one hand, in our Gemara and the Gemara in Yoma, in the Mishnah in Yoma, Yeshua ben Gamla is remembered for good, for setting up Jewish education, and for providing the gold to make the lots in the Beit HaMikdash. On the other hand, he's bribed into being Kohen Gadol. So again, there's the purest model, which is to say it's two different Yeshua ben Gamlas. That's the Ritva's first answer. There's the second possibility, which is, look, he started out bad, but it became good, and then he did good things. And then there's the answer that either he's a complicated personality, like Yotam, or he's a good person in a complicated system, like Sean, and therefore, yeah, maybe he bribed himself in, but he's a good person. Maybe that's really what Tosfos is saying. He's a tzaddik gamur, but there were better people to be Kohanim Gedolim. But, like, it was a complicated system. He wasn't tzaddik, and he paid himself in. The other people were tzaddik, and they didn't pay themselves in, so that's not great. But, like, it's a complicated reality. What Reisinensky adds is that it might be that that complicated reality itself is what drives the need for Jewish education everywhere for everyone, right? Because since the previous model was there'll be a Jewish education system in Yerushalayim, if Yerushalayim is collapsing spiritually, so then what you need is to find a different model for spirituality, and that might be what propels this this Jewish education system that Yehoshua ben Gamla institutes. Okay, so that's the first agadic point in this this Gemara that I wanted to take up. The second one, I don't know if I have firm ideas on it, but let's try. I know that Yosef sat in on my share when we read this Gemara. We read through it quickly, but let's take up the second Agadata in this Gemara. So why don't you help me here, Yosef? The end of the Gemara tells you that you are not allowed to make mistakes in your learning. You cannot make mistakes when you are teaching, right? And the Gemara gets into this through a machloket, whether if you have a choice between two teachers who teach little kids, one who teaches very quickly but sometimes makes mistakes, and one who's a bit slower but he's more precise, which you prefer. So the first sheet on the Gemara is that you prefer the one who's quick, because look, they'll get the basic material and you'll iron out the mistakes later. The Gemara's second possibility is is no. Even if the guy goes slower, that may not be ideal, but once kids make mistakes, so the mistakes never leave. And then the Gemara tells this wild story. So Yosef, why don't you help me? What's the story? Well, you could get it in the Gemara, right? The Gemara at the bottom of Chaf Aleph tells us the story of Yoav. So what's that? What happens? Right. Okay, so if you go to the bottom of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, two lines from the bottom, the Gemara says, "Ki sheish chadashim yashav shom Yoav, chol Yisrael ara kriyat kol zechar ba'adom." Ki asa gemed David amar lei, so that right, he killed all the males in Edom. Now Chazal understand that this is Amalek. So the Gemara says that David came to Yoav and he said, "Yoav, why'd you only kill the males?" Samar lei dichtiv timche et zachar Amalek, because the pasuk says, "Destroy the males of Amalek." Amar lei vanan zecher karinan. We don't read it as zachar, as the males. We read it as zecher, destroy the memory of Amalek. Amarle ana zachara krinun. He said, but when I was in first grade, my Rebbe taught me that it's the zachar, that it is the males. So Azal shyly the rabbi, so he went back and he asked his first grade Rebbe or third grade Rebbe or whatever, and he says, Amarle hech akritun. He said, what do you teach me? Amarle zachar. He said, I taught you Zachar. So Shakal, Safsira Lemikdale. So Yoav took out a sword to kill his Rebbe, his poor, you know, elementary school teacher. Amarle, Amai. He said, why do you want to kill me? What did I ever do? Amarle, Dichtiv, Arur, Oseh, Melech, and Asher, Remia. Because cursed is he who does God's work deceptively. So the guy said, look, so maybe you should curse me because I taught you badly. Amar lei, shafke lo gavad, leikam barur. So let God curse me. Why do you want to kill me? But Amar lei, he said, b'ktiv arur moneh charbo midam. You're also cursed if you don't use your sword to kill the right people. And ikadamri katle, v'ikadamri lo katle. And some say he killed him, and some say he didn't kill him. And then the Gemara concludes with the halacha that certain people should always know that if they make a single mistake, you can fire them. a shochet, you know, and what a sofer, and one of those people is a young is a Rebbe for young kids, where if he makes mistakes because of the gravity of people learning Torah improperly the first time, so you should know that we can fire you. Okay? That's the Agadah as it is integrated into Halacha. So what do you make of this Agadah? Right? What is going on in this Agadah? All I see is some smirks, but yes, Rami. Yes. Okay, so the first point that I think is right in this Agadah, which I know that Rami finds incredible, you know, is saying this incredulously, but I think he's right, is that one level is that this Agadah is meant, I think, at the very basic level, to just highlight how bad it is to make a mistake in what you teach little kids. And yes, you think that the standard is crazy, and the answer is, the Gemara is showing you, look, there are real-life consequences to what you think is a little mistake. And yes, I think at one level, this Agadah falls into that category of Agadot that are there to provide context and flesh out the Halacha in graphic ways, right? Is that you might have been led to believe that what's the big deal if a little kid, you know, doesn't learn Chumash perfectly and has a little mistake here and there, like, how bad could it be? The Gemara's answer is bad. Bad, bad, very, very bad, right? Right, at some level, right, pshat of this Agadah is that whatever it means, and I'm not sure I know everything that means, is that yes, this is a classic example of the Gemara making a halachic point and dramatizing it so that you really, really get it, right? Which is, don't think that teaching kids mistakes are okay. It's not okay. It's really bad. Therefore, Rebbeim, be super careful. And if you aren't, we will fire you. We might not kill you like Yoav wanted to do. That we won't do. That's a bit crazy. But yeah, it's really, really bad, right? It's bad. You know, look, when you see me get angry, which I know never happens, but when theoretically you see me get angry because, you know, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds are not familiar with basic psukim, and I, you know, don't exactly understand what happened in Jewish education until this point, you understand maybe where I get this from. Because the Gemara has this, you know, standard where it tells stories like this, that whatever point they're trying to get across, it's, you know, little kids should actually know what the Torah says, and, like, if they make even one little mistake, that's really not a good thing. Okay, at one level, that's clearly what the Agadah is telling you. Yes. Okay, so right, you could say the flip, which is to say, no, right? Maybe the Gemara is overcompensating by telling this story is to say, look, yes, Rebbeim shouldn't be making mistakes, but, like, you know, it does happen. and you should take that in perspective. You can fire them, but, you know, that's true, but, like, people sometimes take it out of control, and, you know, by putting that in the hands of Yoav, who is, you know, sort of known for taking things out of control, he killed a lot of people in his day, multiple generals fell at his hands, and David wasn't exactly happy about it, and then, you know, as Yotam and I are learning, right, one is, you know, instead of David giving a nice final speech to his son Shlomo, like, Shlomo, you know, I wish you good luck, here's my ethical will, here's my list of people I want you to kill, because I couldn't do it in my lifetime, you know, last parting words from father to son is, find a reason to kill Yoav, because Yoav is really bad, I just couldn't get around to it. So, like, yes, you know, it could be that there's, on the one hand, it's really bad to make mistakes. On the other hand, like, people do make mistakes, and, you know, there are people in the world like Yoav that aren't quite capable of understanding that, and, you know, they tend to solve all problems with the sword. You could just fire him, right? Like, you could fire the Rebbe for making mistakes. Like, that's okay. But, you know, take it with a... Right, you know, so there could be a little bit of both. I looked around a lot for what people said about this, and I'll be honest, most of what I found were variants of what exactly was the mistake he made. You know, was it, because there's no nikudot here, so like, what did he say? Did he say Zahar? And he meant Zecher, or did he say Zecher, and he meant Zecher, or did he not tell him that it meant memory, right? Like, there's a lot of people trying to figure out, like, what exactly is the Gemara saying, right? Meaning, one way to read this Gemara is that the Rebbe actually got the word wrong. Like, he taught him Zachar. But the other possibility is no, like, he never said that. Maybe he really said Zecher, and Yoav heard it as something else, right? Heard it as Zachar or Zecher and thought that it meant only the males. And the Gemara is teaching you something different, which is not only do you have to teach the right thing, but when there are nuanced mistakes that could come out, if you aren't really careful to make sure that people got the point, right, then you've got to be really, really, really careful, right? So it could be that, so there are a lot of, you know, people who seem to think that the message of this Gemara is that mistakes sometimes slip because they're so easy, right? Like, it's not even that you taught it wrong, it's that it's so easy for people to mishear it, and you can't do that, right? You know, look, we all know that this is, there was a, I'm not even trying to say this story, but whatever, right? There was a case in Toronto before my time, but Ara told me about it, that there was a big fuss because a student in a class at York had said that her professor taught the students, I don't know exactly what it was, like, you know, Jews control the banks, or Jews, you know, some classic stereotype, and had, like, raised a problem with the university. And it turned out the rest of the class said, no, you fell asleep during the class, and you woke up in the middle of a conversation where, you know, he was giving examples of, like, you know, historical anti-Semitic comments that had been said by people, right? He wasn't teaching that. Like, you missed half the conversation, right? You know, like, sometimes it's not about teaching the right thing. It's about realizing how things might be misunderstood, because inevitably there's going to be students who space out in class and fall asleep for a little bit in class and things like that. So it could be that this Gemara is telling you that, right? That picking this story that revolves around, you know, the zecher, zicher, zachar, it's not even clear what the mistake is coming to teach you that being a teacher means being attentive to even these very, very minor things, which if you aren't careful, students can misunderstand them, even if you taught them right. I saw another suggestion that maybe the issue here is you know, yesh en lamikra, yesh en lamisaret, right? What if you, you know, do you read it one way, and is it written the other way? You know, and there's a lot of, I don't know why, there's a lot of discussion. For what I found, is people saying, well, what exactly was the mistake? And again, that point might just be, you know, if you're teaching people to read in the wrong way, or you're not being careful in how they read, or you're not teaching them the different ways in which the Torah is read, the Gemara is coming to teach you that those are all significant mistakes that you do have to take into account. I don't think that any of this is wrong, meaning, you know, I think it's true that at one level it's telling you to take these things seriously. Maybe Yosef is right. It's also coming to tell you, but don't take it too seriously. Like, you know, yesh gvul, like, okay, fire the teacher, but killing, you know, it's bad, but it's not that bad. You know, and by putting Yoav in the story, it highlights that. Or I think it is possible that by picking this very ambiguous mistake of zecher, zachar, zach, I don't even know what the mistake, right, no one even knows what the mistake is exactly, that it's highlighting the fact that the problem is specifically that a teacher has to be able to teach and make sure the students get the point, even when there's very nuanced differences, that, you know, if you aren't overly careful, they'll get it wrong. I think that also might be part of it. There may be more to this Agadata. You know, this one I sort of wanted to discuss. I don't know what else there is to this Agadata. It is weird. It is a very weird, you know, Agadata. I do think it probably, you know, it probably also tells us something about Yoav, right? Like, one of the things that you see about Yoav consistently, I think, in Tanakh, is that he never seems to... He doesn't ever do things not for righteous intentions, right? Like, every time he kills someone, he has a cover story for it that he might even have believed, right? Like, there's always a little bit of, he thinks that, you know, Avner is not being sincere, and he thinks that, you know, Asael is You know, he's acting as a Goel Hadam because he killed his brother, and that is a religiously sanctioned thing that he can do. And, you know, he kills Avshalom even though David doesn't want him to kill Avshalom because it's the only way to bring the Jewish people back to David, even if David doesn't recognize that. Right? Meaning, Yoav is this interesting person where this story really fits his personality, where, you know, he never... He's very radical, and he kills people pretty frequently, but what makes him, in a certain sense, so dangerous is that he always does it for from reasons, right? Like, he always presents it as from, like, and this story is like is almost a parody of that, right? Like, he didn't kill enough people in the war because his Rebbe in first grade taught him incorrectly, so his solution to that is to kill his Rebbe, right? Like, you can see that this is sort of, you know, it's like you didn't kill enough people in the war because you were supposed to, so your solution is to kill your poor, you know, elementary school teacher, because that, you know, there is a certain level at which this is almost a parody of Yoav's character in Tanakh. So there does seem to be a lot. And you know, the Ritva here says, you know, and maybe the Ritva is really getting at the different possibilities that we raise. And he says, look, he first rejects one possibility. He says, Kach perusho. Ki klapesh amar lo mashata makvid im ani omid arur amar lo din li alecha shevartani amash amar katu mechamet mitzvah va ur mon echar bo midam. He said, look, you're telling me don't kill you because you're already cursed because you taught Torah incorrectly. So why do I need to kill you? But you made me be cursed because I was supposed to kill everyone in the war and I didn't because I didn't understand the Torah properly. So he says, some say he killed him for that reason. Meaning, if you say it's enough to be cursed, well, I don't want to be cursed. So, you know, I'll solve that problem now with more killing, right? Right, but his second answer is the people who think that he didn't kill him. The reason is because in the end of the day he's a shogeg, right? At the end of the day it was an accident, and what are you supposed to do? People make mistakes, right? So I do think that at some level, like Yosef said, right, you could read the story in both ways. You could either say that the maskan of the story is, yes, it's bad to make mistakes, but, you know, my dahava hava, sometimes you'll make mistakes and you can't overreact, and that's, you know, what Yoav does. And the other possibility is, no, this Gemara is Dafka coming to tell you that there are real consequences when you make mistakes, and that's what Yoav is showing you. He may be an extreme example of this. And it could be both, right? That, again, it could be that at some level showing you it's really bad, but saying it's bad, but not that bad, right? There is, it's bad enough to fire someone, but not bad enough to kill them. You know, it's in that range. And maybe, you know, it's supposed to be both. So I do think there's a lot going on here. I don't know if I've unpacked all the layers to it. But I do definitely think it adds, you know, it's clearly an Agadata that is adding emphasis to the narrative. But the exact message it's conveying is not clear, and it could be that's part of the point, is that it's trying to, you know, frame it in a way that highlights the complexity. Then on the one hand, it's really bad. On the other hand, there's limits to mistakes. And by using the zecher, mistake, it's highlighting how easy it is to make mistakes that have real consequences, to highlight what Rebbeim should be looking for. And again, it could be partially a parody on or a commentary on Yoav's complicated character in Tanakh. I think all of those are possible. And at some level, I think all those are probably true. Any other ideas? Like I said, this I want, you know, some of your feedback. Those are like my initial thoughts on the Agadata, but if you have some other closing ideas on that Agadata, I'm happy to hear them, because I don't know if, you know, it is really a wild Agadic passage. Where I, you know, again, I have initial thoughts, but Sean, I see your mind working. Yes, go. Yeah, and I think you're right. I think the fact that there is this machloket in Mitziut, did he kill him or did he not, is meant to highlight this complexity, right? That, right, the way the Ritva puts it is that the people who think he didn't kill him basically say, yeah, he accepted the notion that people make mistakes, you know, and therefore, you know, the Rebbe can be forgiven for a mistake, and just like the Rebbe can be forgiven, maybe Yoav is saying, look, if you can be forgiven for your mistake, then I can be forgiven for my mistake, right? Meaning, by the same token, the people who say he killed him are saying, no, there's sometimes mistakes are more than just mistakes, and, you know, there are real life consequences, and there have to be, you have to express those, and maybe the machloket is exactly on those lines, which is, you know, either it's really a machloket, right, which is, do you accept simply saying, you know, people make mistakes as an excuse, or do you say, no, we don't? Or do you say that, no, the truth is somewhere in between, that part of us wants to say people make mistakes, and part of us wants to say people shouldn't make mistakes when it comes to Torah, and by having a machloket about the reality, it's saying it's complicated, right? There's a truth in both sort of versions of what could have happened. You know, I don't know, but I think those are all plausible reasons. I think you're right. Having this machloket in Mitziut is a good window into the complexity of the issue. I don't know if it's highlighting two perspectives or Dafka wants you to understand that the fact that they're in doubt is because it's trying to teach you that it's complicated and there are two sides to this. Yeah, Yosef. Right, so you know, this might also be part of the series of Gemaras of you should only teach the right students. Yeah, I think you're right. That this could also be part of that whole complex of stories and halacha that you know you should only pick good students, because when you pick bad students, you know bad things can happen. Yes, correct, and that has to be balanced, and this is one of those things that has to be balanced in general, which is, on the one hand, our desire to educate everyone, on the other hand, understanding that sometimes educating everyone can be disastrous. Yeah, I think you're right, that it being here does highlight that tension as well. Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, fine. Fine, so let's leave it there with those thoughts on these two parts of this Agadata. And again, I guess take a few-minute break till Maariv and Mishmar. Have a good Shabbos, guys.